The following episode of How Did This Get Made is sponsored by LegalZoom. They're helping keep the show free. If you go to LegalZoom.com and enter the code EARWOLF, you'll get a discount and 100% of what you spend there comes directly back to the show. LegalZoom is the best place to help with your legal needs. They're not a law firm, but they provide self-help services at your direction. For more information on how to support this show and the rest of the EARWOLF podcast network, go to EARWOLF.com/insider.
The best worst movie of all time. We saw The Room, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? Gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, cause you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? The show where we try to make sense of the movies that make no sense. I am joined, as always, by my two co-hosts, Jason Mantzoukas.
How are you, Paul?
Very good. And June Diane Raphael. How are you?
Hey, babe.
Today...
Really?
Yeah, sure.
We're doing a... Hey, babe.
Hey, babe.
Hey, babe.
We have an awesome show. This is one of our most requested films by you, the audience. It is, of course, The Room, and we have two amazing guests here today to talk about The Room. Our first guest, you may know him from his articles on the AV Club and on Vulture. Please welcome Steve Heisler.
Hello.
Hey. Hello, welcome. Yeah. Now, you consider yourself kind of like a Room aficionado, right?
Yes, I was introduced to the film a couple years ago, and suddenly I was very, very obsessed with it. I've interviewed Tommy, I've interviewed other people that are associated with the film. I've been to screenings, and I've hosted screenings and met Tommy in person, and like the more I learn about it, the more I'm like kind of obsessed with the mythology behind it.
Well, I am very excited to have you here, and we have an amazing guest here today as well, one of the actors from the film, Greg Sestero. I'm pronouncing your name right.
Yeah, that's correct.
And you play Mark in the film.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of the foil to Tommy Wiseau's character, essentially.
That's right.
So we're very excited to have you here. This is awesome. I've seen the film so many times, and I've seen it in theaters. I've seen it by myself, and every time you see it, it really holds up. As being thoroughly entertaining.
I watched it for the first time, and like the number of times that I had to rewind something to be like, wait, what just fucking happened, was more than any movie we've ever done before. It took me like twice as long to watch this movie because I was like, hang on now, what is going on?
Well,
to me,
the sex scenes don't help either.
Oh my god.
I wrote,
because you jerk off to it. And you're like, oh man, I haven't been paying attention enough, I've been jerking off too much, because this is the sexiest scene I've ever seen.
Those sex scenes for the first like 24 minutes, I wrote it down, like there are sex scenes almost in the first like 26 minutes, three sex scenes, and they're long.
I always say if you can survive those sex scenes, then you can have fun watching the movie, because they are pretty painful to watch.
And one of the sex scenes, they reuse clips from the first sex
recycled sex scenes.
And it's cut so much faster too, and so it's just like it's just half the speed.
It's just a different song. That's what I was like. That's one of the ones where I was like, wait a minute, isn't this the same scene where he's thrusting his butt like that? Why do I have to see this part where he's like thrusting his butt again?
The sex scenes are like a very bad Babyface video, because that slow jam.
So you just mean a Babyface video?
I think Babyface would be quite offended.
They're very long. I wrote down that one of the sex scenes is 8 minutes long.
Tommy Wiseau is
it 8 minutes long?
Sorry. Oh, it's at 8 minutes, and it's 4 minutes long. Sorry, so 4 minutes. But 4 minutes is a long time.
That is a very long time.
Especially, basically, at the point in which it basically has a 4 minute sex scene, only 8 minutes in, so you're now like that third of the of that that time has been split into one third of it is a sex scene.
I remember reading the Variety review of the film when it first came out, and the review was basically like, I watched people walk out after the first sex scene, and then I left. That was the end of the review of the film.
Well, to me, I didn't know what The Room was. I lived in Hollywood, and I would always drive down one of the streets here, and they had a big billboard for it. And I thought it was like a vampire movie. I didn't know that it's kind of this, I guess, psychological drama? I mean, or is it a relationship?
It tries to be that.
Yeah. It's a love triangle movie, but it basically, Tommy Wiseau plays, his character is, what's the character called?
Johnny.
Johnny, yes, of course.
We're all like Johnny.
He is about to get married, and all of a sudden his wife decides she's not in love with him and starts hooking up with your character, Greg, Mark, who is Tommy's best, who's Tommy Wiseau's best friend in the film.
Yeah. And you all live, I believe, in the same apartment building.
Yeah, but we only see one apartment.
Right. Yes.
And a rooftop.
But we establish the hell out of it, but we only stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the movie takes place in San Francisco, but you very rarely leave the house. Like, maybe three times in the entire movie.
Like, super late in the movie, too, I feel like. It's not until really late that I feel like you guys are in that coffee shop, and I'm like, what the hell
is... Well, there's that first scene where Tommy goes to the flower shop.
Oh, right. Yes. Holy shit.
That's one of my favorite scenes.
That scene, I started writing down every line of dialogue in it, and especially my favorite is, she goes, you're my favorite customer.
Here, well, and she says, I didn't recognize you.
Yeah.
And
because
the best part
of... sunglasses on?
A lot of vampires must live in San Francisco.
The best part about that is, like, the more you watch it, the more you see these little things, but, like, she's looking directly at him, and then shifts over, and then says, oh, I didn't know it was you.
It was you.
Like, but she's looking at him when he comes in.
Well, I had that scene just so people who've never seen the movie can kind of get a sense of what this movie is like. Here, tickle this.
Hi.
Can I help you?
Yeah, can I have a dozen red roses, please?
Oh, hi, Johnny. I didn't know it was you. Here you go.
That's me. How much is it?
It'll be $18.
Here you go. Keep the change. Hi, doggy.
You're my favorite customer.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Guys.
It's internally competitive, the dialogue there.
It really
is. Who can say
it
faster?
Now, there seems to be a lot of dubbing in the movie. I mean, like, a lot of ADR. Like, people went in and recorded voices over again. Like, did you do a lot of ADR?
I started to believe his whole life was dubbed at some point. There was a ton of ADR.
Does he not like his voice? Is that part of it, or is he just not clear?
I think he wants to sound as Johnny as possible, Johnny Americana. So I think he really tried to make sure each line was said. You know,
I also assume that they were like rewriting some of the lines too. I'm not really sure if that's true, but it seemed like perhaps the kind of movie that it is, the kind of obsession that he has, that he would hear something and be like, no, I have something better, even after it was already filmed.
Although a lot of the time it seemed like he was just redubbing what he had said. Like, his mouth was
saying those
with the
words.
Lines.
Yeah. I also seem to think at points I was like, maybe they didn't have sound in this scene. Maybe they could not capture sound.
Yeah, the sound booth was quite a story in itself.
Really?
Yeah, there were some interesting happenings on the first couple days. I think the sound person maybe was his first sound job.
Oh, my God.
Well, now, I mean, the famous thing about this movie is that two cameras were put side by side together. Like, he didn't know if high def was the future or 35mm, so they were taped together. That at least is the lore of what happened. So every scene is slightly off center because you're accommodating for two cameras being taped together. Mm-hmm.
There are also times when it cuts to the other camera and it's blurry and then it cuts back to the first camera.
Yeah. Now, Greg, you were the line producer on this movie as well?
I mean, I did a bunch of stuff. At the time, I didn't even know what a line producer was, but I was credited as such.
So
I did a lot of the casting, a lot of the production stuff. Right. Basically anything that kind of needed to be done, I was doing. So at one moment I'd be ordering pizzas for the cast and crew, and the next moment they're like, oh, you're in the main, you're in the scene. I was like, oh, I don't know my dialogue, but... All right, let's do it.
I know you have a book coming out, which will be coming out
later next year.
Okay, I can't wait to read this book. And can you talk about how you met up with Tommy, or like how
I originally met Tommy in San Francisco in an acting class of all places,
right?
And I watched him perform a Shakespearean sonnet. And I think everyone in the class was horrified, but I thought to myself, wow, this guy is something. I want to find out more about who he is.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I approached him. I said, hey, do you want to be scene partners? And he looked at me like I was absolutely insane.
He looked at you like you're insane.
And I didn't know if he thought it was a cool thing or, you know, he was annoyed that I asked him. He's like, well, yeah, write your thing down here, okay? So I was kind of waiting on edge to see what would happen, and he ended up being just this complete you know, alien-like character that...
He really does have this, like, weird thing about him, even, like, that he wears sunglasses. Like, I've seen him, like, present at the... here in L.A., like, they have a midnight screening once a month, and he's there, and he acts out stuff, and he's kissing women, and his body is weird. He's a weird guy, and he's very secretive, and there, you know, no one knows a lot about him.
His body, during those sex scenes... is the strangest. You can't make heads or tails of it.
Yeah.
You really can't, but he shoots his own ass so lovingly.
Yes. It looks like he was a wrestler who was like vacuum sealed.
Yes.
Like it's like
really
I was like
strange.
I was like, "Oh, I was like this is like he has like Sylvester Stallone's older skin. Body like HGH kind
yeah,
of
yeah,
like
yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, it feels like he's doing like he's like doing something to get that ripped at his age."
It looks like fascinating. It looks like they took an action figure and like put it in the microwave for a couple of seconds.
Yeah,
it's just like a little off.
Well, the first thing, if you've not seen this movie, the first thing I want to talk about too, about you know you're in for a treat when there are three different logos all for the same production company that start the movie.
I wrote the same thing.
It's like he couldn't decide which production company logo he wanted, so he said, we'll do all three right back to back. First, it's like a flying W, and then it's kind of like a universal logo. It's like the world with Wiseau, and then it's like just another one, which is even less than those, just a world rotating, showing like a shadow, and then it says like Wiseau Films, but they all say the same thing. Like back and forth, it's all Wiseau Films. So it's like a Wiseau Films production of a Wiseau Films presentation of a Wiseau film.
And I don't know if you mentioned this already, but like he is the writer, director, producer, and star.
Yes.
So he is ridiculously ambitious with this project, as is evident even just in the opening credits.
And before this, not a director, not that we know of. I mean, now you, Steve, you probably know a little bit more about this, but people always say like, first of all, the movie I heard took 6 months to shoot. Is that?
I'm not sure how long it took, but I do know that. Well, from what I've heard from people that I've spoken to, like it was told, they were told it was like 2 weeks or something, and that's actually like the mythology behind the character Peter, who plays the psychologist in the film.
Who's right. One of my favorite lines of his is just "People are people."
It's a very psychological thing to say. But so he's like the other friend that comes in later, and he's the psychologist, and he disappears halfway through the film. And I was told by somebody. Who works in the film, that like he was told it was a 2-week-long project, and then it kept dragging on, and he just had other work that he had to do. So he had to leave. But my favorite part of that movie is his scene when... So obviously there's a scene in which, for really no reason, they get into tuxes and they play football.
Where were
right?
they going? Yeah.
But
I was like, oh, this must be his wedding. Oh, nope,
nope.
It's not.
This is the
wedding
photos.
Party.
Nope.
Yeah.
Oh, it's for the wedding
photos. It's the wedding photos, I think.
I think they'd even fool the crew on that one. They're like, what's the point of that?
So Peter, so they're all playing football, and like they throw the football to Peter, and he falls down, and he goes, "That's it, I'm done." And they walk away. And in the movie, he means like, "I'm done with playing football." But I like to think that they captured him quitting the film, and that was the best cut, and they just used that.
Well, anytime anyone plays football in this movie, someone falls down on the ground.
Like so many men fall down. With no reason,
and we're
for no cause.
And we're talking about, we're saying football, that's a very loose term.
Catch.
It's catch within maybe 3 feet of each other. And then it's like somebody just gets the ball too hard and then
And there's
falls.
Also, but there is also a basketball. I just want to say, there is also a basketball in the movie.
Now Greg, how long?
With no hoop.
With no hoop. On a roof.
On a roof.
Is that kid's name Danny or Denny?
Denny.
Denny. Denny. Denny is just holding a basketball on the roof of the building with nothing to play.
Can we actually hear what Tommy talks about why he chose the football here. Wait, hear you.
I think people should realize that playing football without any gear and a special big huge field, it's fun. So you can play football in tuxedos, you can play football 3 feet apart. And the idea is to have fun. So I would recommend to anyone to try it.
So
that's a great explanation.
Yeah. When asked why people were playing football in tuxedos, that was the answer.
Here's the thing. Since that, 3 feet tuxedo-clad football has exploded.
It's taken off.
He does it at the screenings. He'll get out there on the street and get people in a big circle, and they'll toss the football, and he'll, like, run the drills. Like, at one point, Johnny and Mark go to the park, and they, like, run football drills. And he'll do that at the live screenings with fans.
It's amazing. Now, Greg, how long did you work on the movie for, like, from your start to finish?
God, I was there for too long. I ended up working on the casting process, which in itself took 2 months.
Wow. Now, I heard that, like, I read some stuff online that there was a lot of replacement of cast. Like, Mike and Michelle, like, they were...
I love them.
Totally recast midway through.
I love those two. Those
Mike's whole story...
Yeah.
Mike and Michelle are essentially just two ancillary characters that are... kind of, they like they having sex.
I feel like Mike is kind of the comic relief in the movie.
He has the best receiving a blowjob face I've ever seen in any movie.
It's wonderful.
Mike's performance is worthy of...
I mean, that sex scene alone, and then the scene in which he just tells Johnny about how he got lost his underwear.
Tommy told me at one point that that he had cast two people for each role. And so there were two Lisas and there were two Michelles, and I'm not 100%. I mean, that's just what Tommy told me. So there had to have been double casting at some point.
Yeah, he believed in having backups for every character.
Did like, you have a backup?
I wasn't originally even going to be in the film.
You were the backup.
So I was essentially the backup, but that's a long story behind the backup. But yeah,
so he wanted two characters, almost like you would do a play
for a play. Yeah,
like an understudy.
Again, it's kind of like the logos for the movie. He couldn't decide whether this was going to be a movie or a play.
Okay,
so he decided to kind of mix them together.
Wow. So now, were there people that were just on call that never worked, or were they?
Did they have scenes that were shot?
They were on call, but I think by the end he ended up making his final decision.
Wow.
Even the day of. Filming.
Really?
Wow.
Now,
I like to think that there would have been a shadow movie made. You know how you said there were like two cameras?
Yeah, yeah.
That each camera was capturing different actors doing the same lines. And only Tommy is the common denominator.
I'd love to see a movie just about all the mom's friends that she references.
Oh my God.
I'm obsessed with those
I
women.
Want to see a movie about the mom. I was,
Me too,
obsessed,
I was obsessed with the mom.
With the mom.
Well, the mom has one of the best scenes. She's talking about her friend who is having trouble with the house, and it kind of segues into something different here. We'll pull up this clip right just to get a taste of what the mom scene is like.
Oh, that jerk Harold. He wants me to give him a share of my house. That house belongs to me. He has no rights. I am not giving him a penny. Who does he think he is?
He's your brother.
He is always bugging me about my house. 15 years ago, we agreed that house belongs to me. Now the value of the house is going up and he's seeing dollar signs. Everything goes wrong at once. Nobody wants to help me, and I'm dying.
You're not dying, Mom.
I got the results of the test back. I definitely have breast cancer.
That is really very
And then
easily.
It's never referenced again.
And then she probably has to go. She has to go a lot.
Well, there's a lot of things that are set up. The breast cancer is set up. The why Denny, this 14-year-old kid who's kind of going on 40, who, and some of the stuff I've read, Tommy says that he was meant to be mentally handicapped.
Yeah.
But it's kind of unclear.
He's also a drug addict, too.
He's also a drug addict. Like,
he also likes to watch.
Yeah, that was creepy.
That's one of the early lines in the movie where I was like, wait, what? He's like, I just like to watch. And I was like, whoa.
Basically, he comes over to Tommy's house and he jumps in the bed with Tommy and his girlfriend right when they're about to have sex. And then they get into like a little pillow fight and they go, get out of here. Three's a crowd.
Get out of here, Denny. We need to have a 4-minute sex scene.
So, I mean, you had worked on bigger movies at this point. Like, you worked on Patch Adams and And obviously, this is independent, but it had some money. I mean, it's not like, according to stuff I've read, like people say it costs $6 million or something like that.
Million dollars?
No
way. Yeah. $6
million. $6
million.
Mm-hmm. Wait, hang on.
Yeah. And from what I.
As the line producer, where did that money go?
Not in the film.
From what I understand, there was this woman who was Tommy's ESL teacher. Who provided him with the money. She was this, like, rich, older woman who's in the credits, apparently. Her name is Chloe or something, I think.
Yes, Chloe Productions. It was also a Chloe Productions.
Yeah. And so he would get on the phone and call and ask for more money every once in a while. I'm not sure where $6 million worth of that money could have gone, but...
She had a very profitable ESL training center.
Yeah.
Wow, so, like...
$6 million.
And I'm assuming... you guys paid quite a lot of money just for the green screen.
Rather than going on a roof, they green screen the roof.
Yeah, so the roof is essentially the roof. Well,
it was shot in a parking lot, so we shot a rooftop on a parking lot.
Wait, so you were outside with green screen then? Yeah. No, that wasn't even inside.
What? It just keeps going. We could talk about the dysfunction all day long.
Why not just shoot the rooftop you were on? Okay, this is blowing my mind. I figured you guys were just in a random studio.
Just think, every decision that you could have made that would have made sense, we went
the other way,
different direction.
For creative reasons, or
if you want to be generous,
I think in a way it made sense to Tommy to do it that way, and that's kind of the nature of my obsession with the film, which is that he very deliberately did these things, and his logic is something that I would never have come to, but it's his logic, and that's this is the movie that he wanted to make.
You went full force at something. You know, not listening to anybody else, but just his internal vision. And
he's an auteur, guys.
It felt like some of the lines were autobiographical. Like when he gives that monologue about how he couldn't cash a check because it was out of state.
Yeah, he goes into this long monologue.
That all felt really.
That actually feel like it really does feel like he went into a full thing. Like he moved here and a girl paid for his first date and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah, he has a whole backstory.
Was that Chloe he's talking about?
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm sure that at one point there was probably a Lisa in his life that did something to him, because the whole movie...
It feels like this is autobiographical.
Yeah, because the whole movie is all about how good of a person he is, and he goes out of his way to talk about how good of a person he is. Usually it's through the mom talking to Lisa about why she shouldn't dump him. He's like, he provides for you, he gives you a car, he has a good job, and all this stuff. And he makes women out to be these manipulative people.
At one point, you guys are talking on the rooftop, I think, and... I can't remember, Greg, if it's you or Johnny that says, or Tommy rather, that says that basically women are either too smart, flat out stupid, or evil.
That was me.
That's the line. And I was like, that is the thesis statement of this movie.
that's actually a really good point.
Because there was no justification as to why Lisa thought he was a terrible person and did terrible things.
She just made up her mind.
Everything got over him.
Yeah.
After a long sex scene.
Yeah. Basically, the reason, they have a long sex scene, he falls asleep, and then I feel like that was the trigger moment. She's like, you fell asleep after sex? I hate you.
You're right. That is the moment.
Because
she rolled over and she wanted to talk to him.
And then she looks back and rolls back over. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next morning, she's calling his best friend, you, to have sex with him. Or her. And it's like, but it is, it's like everything you know about Johnny is he's taken in this mentally retarded kid, he's paying for his schooling, he's got a good job,
he's giving money to Lisa to survive, Lisa's mother.
Yeah, like
bought her a red dress.
But it feels like he dated this girl, she cheated on him, and he was like, why?
He thought he did everything perfect, and so it's everybody else's fault. There's nothing to do with him.
It's so amazing to me. Now, did you ever have the feeling in this movie, did you ever go, I kind of want to walk off, or were you at a certain point just going, I'm kind of in for this ride?
I mean, it was so much fun. Just to go every day and say, how are they going to just destroy this scene? I thought to myself, I've never had more fun making a movie.
I was obsessed in this movie with the entrances and exits of the scenes.
Which are very much like a play.
Yeah, it is. So. It feels like you're watching a play because it does take place in one kind of room.
Yes and no, but sometimes people just come in, walk in, have a conversation,
and just walk out. The mom comes all the way over to have
a conversation about something that could have easily been on the phone and then it's like, I gotta go.
And he shepherds everybody through it. Anybody who enters, he goes, oh, hi, Lisa, or oh, hi, Denny, or oh, hi, Mark. It's he has to, facilitate everybody's arrival so that we know which character has just walked in. It's up to him to be oh, hi.
Well, my favorite thing is Denny comes over and he goes, hi, is Johnny home? She's like, no, he's not home. He's like, I wanted to hang out with him. Well, he'll be home in a second. No, I gotta go. There was no information given. It was this character just appeared. He had something to say, but we're not going to hear what he had to say. He'll be back later.
It's literally, come over for 4 seconds. And then
And that, I guess, helps that everybody lives in the same apartment building.
Yeah.
Did you ever improvise or, like, work with him on lines or anything like that? Or is it, like, you just followed, you were along? And
yeah,
just...
I did some fun little improvising stuff that I threw in that I wasn't supposed to, that Tommy was furious about.
Oh, really?
And then, yeah, he wanted me to, like, watch the monitor and make sure, you know, how was his performance. And
yeah.
I'd always give him kind of a thumbs up.
Yeah.
And he'd look at me and shake his head and say, "You just say that."
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Meaning, he wasn't even buying my thumbs up. So I was doing my best.
Now, like, how many takes per scene? Like, per setup?
Some scenes would take all day, you know, day and a half to shoot. I'm not joking.
Wow.
I mean, it was... amazing.
Is it about being like a perfectionist? Is it
no,
about like needing
no, it okay. was just actually just getting a scene down that wasn't stopped because, you know.
Would he be calling cut a lot to stop his own rhythm because he didn't feel like he was getting...
Well, when he was in the scene, he had, you know, help.
Okay.
He would cut the scene. But yeah, it was just actually just being able to get the lines down fluidly or as fluidly as you can get them in a blocking scene.
Would he be rewriting? Like,
no.
No, once the script was locked, it was locked.
It stayed just the way it is. You do not change.
And did you get a script at a certain point where, for me, it feels like you just got pages at a time, but did you
yeah,
get...
Yeah, I was one of the lucky few that yeah. got to see the whole script.
Wow.
Well,
I mean, it's like a Woody Allen movie,
right?
It's like
yeah,
a Woody Allen
movie. But no one else got to see a full script. So I think a lot of people wondered, is there even a full script?
Yeah.
Or is this just kind of pages of dialogue? Or
did you sort of become the person that all the other cast members would ask all their questions
yeah,
to?
Yeah, I became like the, you know, the Tommy whisperer.
Yeah.
Kind of like what,
you were like
you know,
the dance captain.
Yeah, I was like kind of the voice of the audience that people needed some sort of normal
information. Yeah, because I imagine everyone was probably, I mean, because you've been working with him for a long time, everyone would be confused coming on, you know, like, what is going on here? So you obviously probably have to put out a lot of fires.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I got to see a lot of my initial reactions and all these other people that were meeting him for the first time. So
yeah.
Character always seems so surprised that Lisa was coming on to you.
Yeah, well...
And one of the things that you say in the movie is, like, why did you do this to me?
Yeah.
Like, after the first sex scene... It's like he's the one who is the victim.
Well, it's interesting. I'm sure you guys picked this up, but I think all the characters kind of sound the same.
Yeah.
Mark is the victim saying, "Why did you do this to me?" Johnny's my best friend. Like, poor me.
Yeah.
Like, God, I got pulled into this. I have no part in it. You know, Claudette's kind of the victim that no one wants to pay for her house. And, you know, so it's...
Everyone's a victim.
Chris R. is the victim of not having Denny's money.
Yeah, everybody's kind of not getting anything that they want, and they're perfect, but...
Michelle
you know.
And Mark got... Not Mark. Who's Michelle's...
Michelle and Mike, right?
Mike got interrupted. Yeah.
But the only not victim is that fucking bitch, Lisa.
No, Lisa is a victim.
She's so hot, though.
No one understands why she's so furious with this guy who has a great job in computers.
Oh my God, that's like he also
computers.
Works at a bank. He also works at a bank, I thought.
Yeah,
she wanted to get into computers, but he told her it was too competitive.
Okay.
That line, wait a minute, I wrote that line down, like, now I can't. You're right. The computer business is too competitive.
Could you imagine walking into a bank and seeing Johnny as your teller?
Yeah.
I think
on the poster for the room. Tommy Wiseau's hair is much shorter, isn't it?
It's just pulled back.
Oh, it's just pulled back. Okay.
But, I mean, you're basically marketing a drama, an American drama, and you put a picture of yourself that looks like you're about to kill somebody after
it
a 60-hour meth bender. That's
yeah.
What it looks like.
That's what I saw. Like, when I saw that looking down on the street, the billboard, I was like, it looks like, is it a vampire? What is this thing?
And wasn't the tagline like, "Do you really understand life?" or something like
really
that?
Can you really trust anyone?
Can you really trust anyone? Yeah.
No, and the answer, arguably, is no.
No, absolutely not.
I would like to have had that movie retitled Meth Bender. Just like, Meth Bender. If that had been titled Meth Bender, everybody would have gone to see it instantly. Dude, have you seen that poster for Meth Bender?
Yeah.
Bro, we gotta go see that.
And
then if you showed this movie, people would be like, dude, that wasn't about a meth bender at all.
Well, good. Now, Greg, when did you know, like, so you finished the movie, when do you know that it became this other thing? Like, did it solely perk up, or did it, like...
Well, there was a premiere for it, and it went as according as probably what you guys expected.
Yeah. This is San Francisco?
No, it was here in L.A. Okay. It was at the Fairfax Lumley Theater.
Okay.
Fairfax and Beverly.
Okay, right, right.
Very fancy.
Yeah, yeah.
The one that's closed.
I think the one that's closed now? I think it closed it. Yeah. I think we had some bums in attendance. It went really well.
Oh, my gosh.
No, but it was, yeah, everyone laughed, and I saw some comedy in it. I walked out in the first 5 minutes because I couldn't stand to watch a sex scene that I was in with a packed house.
On a spiral staircase.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I hung out.
Also, an uncomfortable place to have a sex scene on a spiral staircase.
Especially when the door could open at any time and you would be very visible to anybody.
And so close to the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we just take a few steps up?
Their passion took hold. Yeah. They could not make it.
So, yeah, I peeked back in. There was just people were laughing through the entire thing. And I thought, okay, that was it. You know, he showed his movie. It's done. It's over. Now it's going to turn into his home video. So some college kids discovered it, and they kind of spread it throughout kind of the LA college scene. And I showed up some months later at a screening on Wilshire, and it was packed. People were going nuts. They were obsessed. They were saying the lines.
Yeah.
They wanted to get the DVD. They were just, you know, and it, so for a year or so it went like that. There was a year anniversary screening at the Sunset 5, and it was like on 3 screens. So it was, you know, it was building slowly. And then there was an article that came out in 2008 in Entertainment Weekly that really just, it was a 6-page article that just talked about all this, you know, all these celebrities that love it and they host parties of it. And from then on, it just completely blew up.
And it's okay. And Tommy has some amazing quotes in that Entertainment Weekly article. He said that he got $6 million because he sold leather jackets to Korea.
I tried that. Yeah. I made about $20.
I heard at one point he was selling yo-yos in San Francisco, like in the 70s or something. I don't know if the yo-yo business took off. And,
wow. Now, my question is to you, Greg. Like, has he come back and be like, we want to do a sequel? Or there is, like, because I know the guy who did Troll 2, like, is like, oh, people like this movie, I want to get together the cast and do it again. Or is he just kind of disconnected from everybody involved?
Yeah, I mean, he wants to make other movies. I came up with some pretty funny ideas for a sequel and talked to him about it, and he seemed into it, but having that made is a totally different story.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, he wants to do other projects.
I would love to see a Tommy, a Johnny ghost, like kind of like a ghost dad kind of thing, like make him alive, but he's walking through people's lives.
Or is his conviction in making this movie that if somebody were to watch it, they would think he's an American actor?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, because there are a lot of lines in the movie.
That blows my mind.
There are a lot of lines in the movie. You have one of them where it felt to me like he's just sort of working out his fascination with like American sayings and things.
Totally.
Like when
don't worry about it.
And XYZ examining your zipper, and you're like, what is XYZ?
There's a great line where they go, we're going to go see a movie tonight. What are we going to go see? And it's like, don't worry about it. You plan too much.
Yeah.
Just take, like, well, we're not talking about a 6-year plan. We're talking about, like, what movie we're going to go see tonight.
We're not planning your 401k. Yeah.
But that also, I guess, makes sense for the way that he kind of, he did this movie in a way, too. I mean,
big question. Why is it called The Room?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
you have no idea. No,
well, here's Tommy's explanation. Take a listen.
Why did you call it The Room?
Because the title has a special meaning to me, and at the time I thought about a special place, a private place, a place where you can be safe, and it's not our room, but it's their room. I thought and I think that a lot of people will relate to it. So the room is a place where you can go, you can have a good time, you have a bad time, and a safe place.
Wow.
Nothing safe about ending up dead on your living room floor.
Yeah. Well, Johnny kills himself at the end after.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, sorry, spoiler alert. After vigorously, I don't know if is he masturbating with?
He's like rubbing the dress on his crotch or something.
Yeah,
in the script it says that he was pleasuring himself.
Wow. So, yeah, because he buys Lisa a dress in the beginning. That opens up this first sex scene that we see. And then at the end, after she's, revealed that she's cheating on him, he smells the dress. He's rubbing himself on it, pleasuring himself, and then shoots himself in the head.
I think that's a pretty interesting turnaround. I think that's the only time that's probably ever been done on film for good reason.
I think Dylan McDermott came close in that American Horror Story show where he's masturbating and crying at the same time.
That's a
classic McDermott.
But yeah, no, I mean, the movie basically is like, feel sorry for Johnny. It's like you have, like, because he is the victim. He is the victim all the way to the end. And then,
well, it's like, it's again that rooftop scene of you guys where he's basically like, I'm so happy to have you as my best friend. And I love Lisa so much. And it's like, oh boy, that's sowing the seeds of your own destruction.
It's like how the trailer goes, a perfect world, a perfect life, everything's supposed to be perfect.
Yeah.
And he's perfect, but it's everything that crumbles around him.
His body's perfect.
Yeah. And he humps perfectly. I mean,
he really does. He really gets that ass is in there. That is
the second sex scene that uses the footage from the first sex scene literally blew my mind. That was the moment where I freaked out.
What about when he walks out naked?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Amazing.
I came. Weird. Too much information.
So how do you guys feel about the fact that this, like, do you see this as a comedy? Because there's a lot of debate about whether or not this is, like, he bills it now as a dark comedy.
Well, he built it as a dark comedy.
But the question is, like, did he know beforehand?
No, of course not.
And
he
I think he might
no
have.
No possible way.
I don't know.
You think so, really?
I think that there's...
If the comedy isn't coming from the situations being... darkly comedic.
There are jokes in it.
I just think it's like so ridiculous that there had to have been part of him that recognized that it's just so over the top that it might be perceived as comedy, but it's dark.
But like when he's having that romantic dinner with Lisa and they're eating pizza and drinking, like that's like one of the most ridiculous, insane things I've ever seen. Like that was, I laughed out loud at that.
You have nice legs, Lisa.
Yeah.
Did you catch that?
So. Funny, but like I don't think he would know that would be that funny at all. Like, there's no way.
Yeah, what do you? Yeah, I mean, obviously, Greg,
I think there's some like cutesy little stuff where Denny comes in and like jokes around. So there's some scenes that were supposed to be maybe lighthearted, but I think at the end of the day, this was
What was Denny addicted
to? Yeah, it sounds like it was like a Tennessee Williams play, right? I mean, that's what he was going for.
It was to be the Streetcar Named Desire of the 21st century.
And it is. Mission accomplished.
In the most beautiful way.
Did it take you, I'm guessing, like 10 days to shoot the fight sequence? Did you have a stunt choreographer?
Pretty close, yeah. You're in the ballpark.
Really? Because I was like, that is epic. And I was like, the way you talk about how long it would take to shoot things, I'm like, I bet that scene took forever.
Yeah, that was
just an eternity. A full day of like jostling. Shoulder jostling.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that I found that was really interesting was they never used the term fiance. They always say future husband and future wife. They never say fiance, which is a nice, like, bizarre, just like, oh, that's a very common thing for us to say. But, and now you've talked to a lot of people involved in the movie. I mean, anything that you've uncovered that you?
Well, I've spoken to Tommy. I've spoken to Greg before. I was hosting a screening in Chicago that Tommy was at, and I wrote this whole article about my experience with him. And then after that article came out, it's at the AV Club. Somebody who used to work on the film contacted me under like the shroud of anonymity and was like, I used to work for him, and like I'll tell you some stories about him. And so I called him up, and he was telling me about how he sold yo-yos in San Francisco, and how, he's from France, and he came over, and he was from Poland, and he took a French name, and he came here, and how he did find it a dark comedy at the beginning. So like there were darkly comedic elements, but I just don't think he understood clearly what a dark comedy was.
Well, it's hard to write comedy in not your own language, or if he's using an ESL, I mean,
dark comedy is such a specific genre that you have to have an understanding of. But also, apparently, like, part of the reason why he was doing this film was, I mean, clearly there's this woman that wronged him, and he wanted revenge on her to show her this, but he wanted to be perceived as, like, a sex symbol, it seems like.
Yeah, right? I mean, he definitely is. He's definitely positioning himself as this, like, as a hero, like as a Brad Pitt kind of character. Oh, the one thing I'm obsessed with that I heard, by the way, and I don't know if any of you can enlighten me to this, but when they are in the coffee shop, which is odd because it's sort of like, oh, now we're in this coffee shop, and before the actual scene starts, it's just really just people ordering coffees and cakes. It's, you know, new people. I could swear that someone just ADR'd the sound of a coffee machine. Like someone went, it doesn't sound like, it sounds like a voice did it. It really does. I hope I'm right on that.
A lot of the ambient sounds I heard were done by Michael Winslow from the Police Academy movies.
I mean, and everything in this movie goes between being like a fight or a very casual. It's just like it's like people get into fights here so kind of quickly.
But then like your fight sequence, Greg, with Tommy is like you fight and then he's like, go, cut it out, let's be okay, and you're like, okay, yeah. And you shake hands again and then you start fighting again. It's like amazing.
And there's also one point when Lisa and Johnny are fighting and then the fight ends and Johnny's just like, don't worry, I still love you.
Yeah.
And it just ends. Like the emotions range from so over the top to just nothing.
Did I miss something?
It goes into total non sequiturs sometimes. Yeah. Like fight and it's like, do you guys like donuts? You know,
should I order a pizza scene?
Yeah,
should I order a pizza scene is one of my favorite scenes. I already ordered a pizza. You know,
you and think then, of everything.
Yeah. No, and then you think about everything.
He keeps pushing
what
her
he
down.
Says. The little details of that are just.
You think about everything.
You think about everything.
Well, there's a line here where he goes, where it's his birthday party, and he says like, "You invited all of my friends." Like, oh, I wish I wrote it down.
Good thinking.
Good thinking. Well, who else would you invite to your birthday party?
I never would have thought to do that.
And are we to understand that Lisa put this birthday party together to simply get you, Greg, in the room with her after everybody walked outside? Like, what was her?
It's a very Lisa thing to do.
Oh, she's such a bitch.
Because that's really crazy.
So sexy.
Yeah, such Lisa.
I mean,
Lisa
so
picks
hot.
The most.
She's so hot.
Inappropriate times to have sexual relations with
like,
your
that
character.
Just seems like crazy. That's such a long way to go.
Yeah, never leaving the house is probably one of the biggest problems.
Oh my god,
she's an agoraphobic.
She's a shut in, right?
yeah, you think, you know, take her for a walk once in a while.
Yeah, she ordered
she's
pizza.
She's definitely getting her nails done.
In.
She's definitely getting her nails done somewhere.
Her nails looked.
Her
great.
Nails are like featured in every scene.
Yeah.
Or she had no time to dye her eyebrows the same color as her hair.
But I have that's a lot make, to that, say about her eyebrows.
That's what makes her so beautiful.
Oh.
She's so beautiful.
That contrast. Are there any, I want to know, is there stuff you shot that is just simply not in the movie?
There's a couple.
And are there sex scenes?
God, no. No, there are a couple scenes. The Chris R. scene.
Which I saw on the DVD, right? Where they're playing horse?
Interior, yeah. Which didn't get used because it wasn't dramatic enough. And then there was an
But it's essentially the same exact scene. Like,
there's
a deleted scene where, like, Chris R. tries to take, or Denny tries to take Chris R.'s mind off of the heroin money. Or, sorry, the mind off the drug money by playing horse with him. But then it's the same scene.
It's the same scene, yeah. Just he felt the rooftop was a bigger, you know, a bigger stage. And by God, it was.
And the rooftop was where you guys would go to just think.
Yeah. Just hold the football and just, you know,
just
contemplate.
Just do some of your thinking.
Yeah.
And Mark at one point, like, smokes pot, it's implied.
Yeah. Oh, like, there's that was actually a really funny part because, you know, in this film, I'm supposed to be a grown man, but I have to go up on the roof and have my little stash of weed, which is hidden under a block, and pull it out to go, like, secretly smoke weed. I mean, that's something you do if you were probably 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
You just smoke it
in your own apartment or, you know,
well,
wherever.
It's like also a pretty pivotal moment for Mark when he shaves his beard off.
Yeah, I think it was a life-changing...
Oh. So what was happening
this
for him
like,
then?
This
it was
a
like, this is when I become...
Moment.
Yeah.
There was... no reason in the film for that, but there's backstory to why.
Oh, okay,
why I did that, but there's no character.
Okay,
and no, did you?
It's never in the script.
Gotcha.
Actually.
And did you guys shoot in chronological order?
We shot in set order.
Okay,
so you know, living room stuff, bedroom stuff. You know.
Wow, and it took a. I mean, and you were there a while. And were there reshoots involved? Or like,
no, just the you know the Chris R.
Which
was done, you know, during the rooftop stuff.
And did anyone ever bring up to him like we should shoot on a real roof in San Francisco, or is that just price prohibitive?
Yeah, but he would immediately shoot them down. We do my way, okay? Please sit back. Okay.
I love it just to be. The thing that blows my mind about that is to. Because I guess the reason to put a green screen roof is to be like, well, we don't have any problems with weather. But then to shoot it outside with green screens, you really are not. You really aren't really saving that much.
It's like building a house inside another house.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And now, you don't have to answer this, do you see any of the profits from this? Because I feel like this is so successful, the DVD, the posters, or anything, or is that something that you were, like, that...
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly, I mean, of all the things I've ever done in my life, the least I ever expected was from this, and this has actually given me the most,
great.
You know...
Oh, that's awesome. So, like, you actually did have, like... The proper contracts and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, it's paid. Yeah, it's definitely paid off. And I mean, I've been able to travel the world from it. You know?
Yeah, that must be amazing. Like, where have you gone with this movie? Like,
I have been to Ireland, to Dublin several times. I've been to Prague.
And it must be like the most fun because it's like when you're there. I mean, I even know like just from being a fan of this, like just to have you here is so exciting. It's like this is like you know, it's like you go to these crowds of people that you're. It's like you're a hero. You get to go in and get to do this stuff. It's like it must be exciting to go there and kind of see it that way.
Yeah, I guess it's fun to just kind of talk to people about what they saw with it because I know, you know, my first experience with it, it was disbelief. So it's kind of fun to see, you know, normal minds digest this, you know, crazy material. So it's kind of fun to have a conversation about it and for the, you know, answer some of their questions because they can't really get, you know, they're not going to get answers from, you know, from Mr. Genius himself.
Yeah, because he changes his answers and he's all over. I mean, to me, the thing that's so engaging about this movie, and I can't tell you enough, if you've not seen this movie, buy this DVD. It is well worth it and rewatchable. It's like there are so many movies that are, you know, quote unquote bad but this it transcends that. It's not a bad movie. It's a fascinating movie.
We've watched a lot of bad movies.
Yeah.
Like that is what we do. And this is not, this like instantaneously becomes its own category of what's happening right now.
Yeah.
This isn't like an existentialist drama, I think.
Because you are, everything about it is like, I would never have thought to do it like that. You know, and the relationships, it really is, I think it will, better than, I think this will stand the test of time. I think as years go on, this is going to be one, it already is screening throughout the country, midnight screenings all over the place. Seeing it live, is a whole different experience and one that if you haven't done, you have to do because I didn't know the thing. Like there is apparently a picture frame of a fork
or a spoon
and people bring spoons to the screening. And every time that you see the picture frame with the spoon in it, people throw spoons at the screen. And it's amazing because first of all, it's on the screen a lot. That picture frame of the spoon. It's amazing.
People bring footballs and stuff, and they play in the aisle. When I hosted that screening at the Music Box in Chicago, I saw Tommy reacting to these people watching the film, and like part of me wants to believe that he saw these people liking his film and was just like, you know what, some people are here to mock me, but it's fame, and I'm just going to kind of take it for what it is. But you can tell that he's sad. Like he would kind of slink off every once in a while and not want to watch the film. He sat in the lobby for a really long time, and then these two girls came out and like wanted to interview him for something, and he was just more excited about that than
he's like kind of getting off on the fame than they were what it's become.
Yeah.
I mean he has created his own mythology. I think he likes to be this kind of, you know, different type of guy. I had a theory that maybe when he broke the mirror, that may have been things that that may have given him 7 years of bad luck. Maybe it played the production in a weird way.
There's all sorts of really weird stuff. Like I was looking for symbolism in everything.
Yeah.
I was like at the beginning of the movie, Denny eats like an apple, and I was like, is this supposed to be like a biblical like original sin kind of? I kept looking for stuff to be like try and make sense of it. Like what's he doing? But I think it's just. insanity.
I mean, the thing I love is that he has a lot of tape recorders. There's a lot of tape recorders. This is 2003. Yeah. Tape recorders are kind of gone at this point. And there's one great shot where he gets mad and he throws a tape recorder across the wall, and it's slow-mo shot, but the tape recorder doesn't break. It just kind of gently bounces off and it falls. It's amazing. There's every shot in this is worthy of dissection. And
you pointed this out, Paul, when he plays back the what he's recorded,
the conversation between your character,
it's different dialogue.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just gonna play back this scene that we just saw as an audience, and it's different.
Not this scene though.
But it's really an amazing
we've
movie.
Had that conversation like four times, so he just pulled, you know,
one. Yeah, the one that he liked the best audio wise.
Oh, man. I almost feel like we have to play the flower shop scene again.
Hi.
Can I help you?
Yeah, can I have a dozen red roses, please?
Oh, hi, Johnny. I didn't know it was you. Here you go.
That's me. How much is it?
It'll be $18.
Here you go. Keep the change. Hi, doggy.
You're my favorite customer.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And now, and before we go, I do want to give a big thanks to Sean Sakame, who donated money to How Did This Get Made? Actually, a lot of money. And he is at SnapTheJap on Twitter. Great guy. I actually co-hosted Doug Benson Loves Movies with him. Thank you, Sean, for giving us money. I don't know where that money goes, but I think it goes.
People could give us money.
I didn't know that could happen either.
Did
but
Jason
I'm sure
I get some of that money?
No, I didn't get any of that money. I'm sure it goes to Earwolf.
Well, but you are wearing a new necklace.
Yeah.
Whatever, guys. It's cool. but thank you, Sean, for donating some money. It helps Earwolf. It helps us be able to record and do all this great stuff and get these amazing guests like we had today. Greg and Steve, thank you guys so much for coming here and doing this.
Thank you.
And talking about the movie. Now, anything to plug for both of you guys?
All my writing is at stevehysler.com.
Okay.
I occasionally write about The Room. I had to be told at one point by an editor that I was no longer allowed to write about The Room because I wrote about it too much.
And they're great pieces. And of course, Greg, you have your book coming out.
Yeah, it's going to be published next year by Simon & Schuster. The working title right now is Locked Inside the Room.
That's amazing.
But
how is it coming? Is it fun to kind of revisit it all?
It's
amazing.
Did
you keep journals or anything during the time you were working on it?
I did, and I also, I mean, when you go through an experience like that, it's something you probably can't ever erase from your memory. But I actually have a lot of behind-the-scenes footage that was shot.
Oh, wow.
So that's really great to make sure to capture all those moments and descriptions so everyone can really enjoy what it was like to be at Ground Zero.
Do you have post-traumatic stress disorder?
I'm hanging in there.
I can't wait to read it, and it will be the first real kind of first-person thing about this movie, which is going to be great. So keep your eyes open for that. Thank you, Dustin, as always, for being an amazing engineer, and that is all time we have. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
You are lying. I nearly hit you. You are tearing me apart, Lisa.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. Oh, oh, oh. The wolf dead.